Good afternoon. Thank you all for being here. My name is Samir Lebohova. As I was already introduced, my topic today is the prediction of carbon in the landscape and its stability using some most recently techniques and technologies. Before I go with my talk, I would like to acknowledge all the co-authors in this research. Diane Stott, who works for the ARS, National Soil Erosion Lab, and she's a biogeochemist and brings her expertise in carbon stability and decomposition. Dr. Owens, who brings the expertise in the soil landscape models. So somewhat I'm breaking down the title. Hans Edwin Winsler, who has been part of this project from the beginning and has been a major contributor to this, and he brings expertise in terrain attributes. Also John Hempel, who has been very supportive of this project from the beginning and whose support has also provided the funding to continue to do the research. And Dr. Laura Bolling, who is the hydrologist at Purdue University and brings their expertise in water. There has been a great interest in the ability or in carbon sequestration, especially in the role that the soil terrestrial carbon can play in sequestering the carbon. As you can see, according to some estimates, especially the one from IPCC, there is a potential there to recapture some of that carbon, and these numbers can vary depending on the research and the source, but the major point is that there is a potential there. Data like this come from research done previously, long-term research, like this one showing the decline in carbon stocking into soil since we start to manage these systems, but also showing some promises once we start to sort of influence the management and the way we do things about managing the carbon. So looking at this potential, however, the main question that we ask is how can we predict this distribution of the carbon? And if we do predict it, what can we do to affect its distribution? And how can we use this in future management decisions to identify areas that could be more sensitive as opposed to areas that are less sensitive to the management? And also identify areas that could provide us with the highest return for the investment that we made or the changes in the management. So our hypothesis is that this spatial distribution and stability can be predicted by terrain attributes, and it's related with topography mostly. So we can predict that from terrain attributes. So the goal is to assess this relationship and with the idea that once we recognize this relationship and we quantify it somehow, we can use that for future predictions. And so this is the major sort of a focus of this research, the ability to predict. And there's a good reason we are interested in predicting it, because going out there and measuring, as you already know, could be very expensive. So we always rely on predictive tools and relationships. This is the study area showing Indiana and Howard County highlighted in red. Initially, this project, we started this as a project updating and maintaining the soil survey for Howard County as part of the NRCS soil survey program in Indiana. However, as we started going into the field, we recognized certain patterns. As you can see in this aerial photography, there is a clear, there are some clear dark areas there and some bright areas. And if any of you have flown over the Midwest on an airplane, and if you look out of the window, you may be able to recognize these patterns. So more specifically, I will focus on one of the areas that we ran one transect, the one that's encircled in red. And the green one shows the transect, which is run based on a soil catena concept or a soil landscape model, and I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. So what we did was run this 21 transects, 10 point each, and representing the catena. In other words, we moved from the higher elevations to the lower elevations, and we took 0 to 25 centimeter depth. The reason we did this was because in these particular areas there are a lot of carbonates that could come up to even 50 centimeters, and they could skew the results and lead to overestimation of the carbon. And since we don't have any methodology at this point, or at least in this study, we didn't use any methods to separate those, we decided to limit ourselves into the 0 to 25 centimeter. So here is the representation of the catena or the soil landscape model that I was trying to explain. And as you can see in these three soils, Fincastle, Brookson, and Cyclone and Kokomo, there is a relationship. It's topography that it's mainly differentiating these soils. So if you take a closer look at how the landscape is laid out, you can see that the depth to this restrictive layer can vary, but it's in the range of 1.5 to 2 meters. However, when you look into this shallow, relatively restrictive layer and this topography, water obviously has a major role in driving the soil properties, how they develop, but also related to this is the carbon. So looking at this catena, one can sort of expect that the processes that occur in the lower parts would be somewhat differently from the ones that occur in the upper parts, and that would lead to differences in carbon accumulation. So from what I showed so far, there is a clear sort of a relationship there between the topography and the way that the soil properties, and especially carbon in this case, can develop. So if we can if we know that relationship, we recognize that now we can use some algorithms, or we call them terrain attributes, that are derived from the DEM that could be used as explanatory variables for future predictions. And one of the most common ones that has been mentioned over and over is topographic wetness index. And what it usually what it comes down to with this topographic wetness index is that having two components, they are the major ones, are the contributing area and the slope. It sort of classifies or divides the landscape into areas that converge water and the areas that divert it. So the areas that would converge water would be most likely the depressions, and so the TWI values would be much higher. The areas that diverge it would be the summits. And I use the word depression because in these landscapes we don't have that classic terminology that we use in differentiated landscapes. So these are most likely like depressions rather than foothills. But the major point here is that we can use this now as a tool to find out whether or not there is a relationship between this and the carbon values that we see and the spatial distribution. And if we do, then we can use this for future predictions. So if you look at this area, you can see the TWI values ranging from 0 to 15, 15 being the highest, where the potential for water to accumulate is highest. And as you can see on this particular transect, it coincides with the carbon values that we measured from this transects. You can see you can almost see the increase in all, and also the threshold right at the contact when you have a transition from a very abrupt transition, I should say, from the high TWIs to the low TWIs. Another look at it, this also coincides with the dark areas, as you can see from this picture. And if you have to be there in that landscape, that's how this would look. This is a picture taken from that area. And as you can see, there is not much relief in this area, but it doesn't take that much for this property for this differentiation to occur, especially when this has been going on for almost 15,000 years since the last ice age. So a closer look at this shows the same pattern as I also already explained. But what's most importantly now, we can derive some relationships between this DWI and the carbon in numerical terms, so we can quantify this. So here is the transect. Now, if you have to look into this transect from a two-dimensional aspect, and you're looking at going from the far lower left, looking towards the upper right, you'll see this transect going from the higher positions to the lower areas, lower elevations. And as you go along this, you can see these are the soil samples that we collected, and these are just pictures taken of the samples at different positions. And you can see the darkening of this color, which coincides with carbon values that range from 0.6 to almost 3.8. So there is a gradation which is, and it's very distinct. You are not talking about values that range from 0.6 to 1, but you're going from 0.6 to 3 to 4. So there is quite a gradation. And if you look at the DWIs, there is a nice also trend with the DWI. And when you put these two together, you end up with relationships like this. And the reason we chose this is one of the ways to look at it. There are many other ways. But when you look into this, you almost see that exponential decrease. And the reason we use that is because of the threshold that I already mentioned. You can see how the carbon values jump right at the boundary of the high and low TWIs. However, so far we talked about total carbon. What's also important in this topic, especially from the management viewpoint, is its stability. Where is the window of opportunity in terms of management, where we can really have an impact in storing this carbon? So if you look into this cumulative CO2 evolved from the incubation, you can see a clear distinction between the soils that were having high TWIs as opposed to the ones that had low values. And this is the same transect that I showed previously. And as you can see, the higher numbers at the bottom of the legend coincides with higher values. However, if you look into the rate of release of this, you can see clearly that there is a small window of opportunity for us to really have an effect in this management. As you can see, after day 21 or 28, the differences between different landscape positions are almost minimal. And as this other slide will show, you can see that as you go from day 3 to 6 months, the R square relationship between the TWI and the CO2, it's almost zero. So after that, that's our window of opportunity, and that's where we probably should focus the effort in terms of providing some guidance to the management as to how they can approach this. And again, this is the same sort of a illustration. Eventually, what we like to do is make maps of this sort of a form when we can have some spatial prediction of this carbon. And this is just the total carbon, but however, we can have also predictions for other indices that can be developed from other incubation methods and parameters that we derive from them. So in conclusions, as you can see, we can do a better job, and we can predict this spatial distribution of the carbon instability, and we can use the soil landscape models, and we can quantify this through terrain attributes. And remote sensing, of course, can provide further guidance in upscaling this, because so far we have been limiting our discussion into similar landscapes. But when we have to go further into upscaling, then remote sensing may be very helpful. And that's all. Thank you.
Looked at on a mass basis as opposed to a percentage as a quantity.
No, I haven't done that, but no, that has not been calculated. But my speculation, if I can speculate, is that it probably is going to show up. That relationship is going to still be there, because all you need to do is just multiply those and get the bulk densities in. Yes. So, was it again? If I. Well, I think you can do that. If you go out in the field, and as I showed in that picture, it's a very, very low relief area. But if you walk into these areas, you can start to see even the changes in color. I mean, you are into this summit, and it's only from here to there that that's the elevation. But you start walking, and the distance, of course, is a bit longer because these are flat landscapes. You walk about 100 meters, you start to go slow. You start to see the change in color. You can, yeah, you can do that. You can see that even visually. But of course, the soil has to be bare. So if you have vegetation, then you won't be able to see it. Which brings another topic that we don't have time probably, but to land use. How does that factor into all these predictions? But
all right, thank you very much.